Blog Talk Radio.
I'm in Arizona. It's a great state. I'm not plugging an ad for Arizona for all of you Easterners to move here, but there are a lot of Easterners moving out this way, coming west. Not for gold. Well, I guess in a way, the golden sun. It is nice. And sometimes we have a little cold weather, a little cool weather, especially in the southern parts of Arizona, but most of the time it's a pretty tempered weather. And when you go up north, there's actually a little snow on the ground. That's right, snow in Arizona. Green trees and green grass. It's a lovely state. I love it here. It's very similar to California without the beach. Well, anyway, here I am, Professor Applewhite, with you again this morning, loving it, just loving being able to share. That's so important to me, as a teacher, being able to share. As a student, that's right, I'm a student also, so I'm ready to receive information just as much as I'm ready to share it. And that's why we call this show Student to Teacher, because it doesn't matter about the academic degree that someone has that makes them a teacher. It's their willingness to receive and share information. That is the greatest teacher. And that can be someone that teaches Sunday school, to teaching sheet metal in a vocational school, to teaching children at home. That's right. You're all teachers if you allow yourself to be. And that means that you have to be able to receive information, process it, and then share it back out again. Hello, students, and hello, teachers out there. Don't let labels fool you, part 3 of 3 today. And this is a conclusion of the theme, Don't Let Labels Fool You. But the ongoing message that I hope all of you take from this is that we don't allow the labels or stereotypes that we hold in our heads to determine who we are, number one, and who other people are, just by what we think we see and what we think we hear from them. And then we automatically put a label on them, the same label that many times people put on us. So we just have to be a little bit more cautious of the way we use our labels or stereotypes. Especially this morning, we want to focus on the labels or stereotypes placed on us in our educational systems. They carry the most weight, you know, in determining our success as adults in the workforce. Believe it or not, they really carry the most weight. That's what I hear over and over and over again when going out into the workforce and doing seminars and talking to different employees that are in training programs, adult education programs. And they talk about how their success is determined by how they were treated in the educational system from kindergarten through 12th grade. But acknowledge that as much as I hope help them and help you out there listening, to acknowledge that we have a choice as to whether we wear those labels that have followed us from preschool even to post-high school. We can change what our labels say about us. We really can. We can change what our labels say about us to us first, looking in the mirror and saying, I don't want to wear this label anymore, that I am learning disabled, that I am unable to spell, unable to do any math, so why should I go to school? Why should I apply for that job training program or for a job? Because they're going to ask me to take that test, and I can't take that test. And you go through all of these processes in your mind before you even get to the real test, the actual test, or the interview. Isn't that something? That we build ourselves up with a lot of fear, many of us build ourselves up with a lot of fear before we even take that step, make that choice. Well, before you have to worry about making the choice of whether or not you're going to feel confident enough to pass the test, how about we make the choice of whether or not we are going to change how we see ourselves? That's right. How we see ourselves and changing what our labels that we've put on ourselves or that we've accepted that other people have said about us. Are we going to accept them? It might have been your mother or your father. Yeah, it could have been your parents that put a negative label on you. And don't forget, as we've talked about in the last two shows, there are positive labels also. So we don't want to get rid of the positive labels, the labels that give us pride. You know, the ones where your dad or your mom or your teacher patted you on your back or gave you an award for special recognition, attendance. Yeah, even attendance awards are great. So we want to, you know, make sure that we discern carefully what kinds of labels we want to get rid of and those that we want to keep. So this is what we want to focus on this morning. We are going to talk about special ed. This is especially true for those who have been enrolled in special education programs or who may be presently enrolled in adult education programs or thinking about it. You know, how many people really want to be in an adult education program? Because, you know, that has its own label, doesn't it? That same stigma that's attached to special education in K-12 carries on over to the adult education programs, because most people know that the people that are usually in those programs are finishing up a GED. One of those GEDs that everyone talks so badly about, but that is very valid in the workforce. It's a very good diploma to have. A general education diploma is a GED, and there's nothing wrong with having that GED. It is better than zero. That is for sure. You've accomplished something. And I can tell you, as one who has taught that GED class, that it is not an easy exam. For anyone that thinks that it is, that it's an easy way out, it is not. And anyone that's taken that exam can tell you, you do study. It is not the easiest way. It is not the easiest way to overcome the stereotype that's associated with special education and taking the GED. For those of you who are calling in, we encourage you to call in to the actual radio show number at 1-646-727-3758 so you can join our show this morning. So let's finish up with what I was going to say here. This is especially, like I said, this is especially true for those who have been enrolled in special education programs. So one of the things I guess we have to realize is that we're gonna wear the labels whether we like it or not. We're gonna wear labels because it makes it easier to understand each other and the things in our world. Stereotypes are important. We categorize ourselves and other people and their characteristics, the way they are, by labeling. So there's no way to get away from labeling. It's just, how do you choose the right label for you and what should it say? And of course, by doing that, choose the right label and for yourself, and what should it say about other people? Choosing the right label to call other people. Okay? So that's important too. And we don't want to lose that ability we have to make choices about the kinds of labels that we wear. We know for sure that wearing a label of special education in our society, unfortunately, does have some negative connotations, has some negative meaning to it. Well, let's try to change that. And the changing starts within us. Within us. We have to change. If we've had learning disability issues, such as challenges with math and challenges with spelling in school, okay? Especially those two. Those are the areas. And reading. If you've had any of those challenges, then you need to start thinking about it differently. Here's how. Here's the beginning. The beginning says, what do I do best? You see, I know many students, even today, that one wrote me just recently, and she is a softball player. Baseball, softball, I really don't know the difference between the two. I think one is a harder ball or something. But she was telling me that she's not very good at reading. So it's hard for her to get through the textbook that I've assigned to her. But she is really great at talking a good game. And when I say that, I don't mean that as a put down at all. I talk a good game. That's one of my skills, I guess, and most people that host radio shows or television shows have that gift of gab, if you will. So that's her talent. And so do we look at her and say, well, because you can't read very well, then that means that you're special ed, and here's that word. It's trying not to come up, but it's there because people say it, and that word is stupid. Oh, I hate that word. Oh, gosh, I can't tell you how much. Who would want to call another human being, especially someone they claim that is a friend and that they love, stupid? Especially when they know that they have challenges with math, spelling, reading, or any of the other subjects. And to call them stupid just reinforces some really negative stuff. I don't care if you're playing. What's playing? Playing about something so serious like that. That's just like someone who has a burn, has been burned in their life from an accident, and you go around making jokes about, how skin looks when it's burned. You wouldn't do that. I mean, that would hurt someone's feelings very badly. Or if somebody is in a wheelchair and you laugh at them, well, why would you say that word, stupid, to someone who has been challenged with math, spelling, and reading issues, academic issues? First off, like we said, don't let labels fool you. So that label of special ed or learning disabilities, don't let it fool you, because that person could be very intelligent in a lot of other different ways. Because intelligence doesn't require academic proficiency, doesn't require academic success. We have someone online. Good morning. This is Professor Applewhite.
Good morning, Maria.
Good morning, Maria. It's always a pleasure to have you on the show. If you have anything to say, you just let me know. Have you had any experience, or that, would you like to share anything right now?
No, not really.
Okay. All right. Well, just listen in. We've got a few other people here online, but yes, let's open up that chat line and make sure that we don't have anyone that's trying to get through and write in a message to us. And we try to tell everybody what the message says, but if you choose for me not to use your name, then I will not do that. But anyway, back to this issue about special education, because that's so important. Why would someone call you or call anyone else stupid or dumb? That's another word. You're so dumb. You're so stupid. Why don't you know that? You know, those are terms and concepts that can tear a person apart before they even get off the ground. When they're in preschool and kindergarten through sixth grade, if they've heard those terms over and over and over again by big brother, big sisters, by parents, hopefully a teacher doesn't use that term, at least not today. I know back in the day, there were a lot of teachers that would use very negative terms with students. But supposedly, that's not happening today. But I do hear some stories out there that are absolutely frightening about what teachers can do in their autonomous classrooms. In other words, their classrooms that they have, they're enclosed. They call them self-contained classrooms for a reason. You see, no one really goes in their classroom to check them out all the time. So even though the principal might make various visits to the individual's classroom, to the teacher's classroom, they do not, absolutely do not stay in the classroom to evaluate what the student or the teacher is doing at any given time. So what I ask now, as we're broadcasting live on air, is that for those of you who wish to come on to the show to call 1-646-727-3758, and we'll be glad to take your comments in. Thank you for calling in and listening to the Student to Teacher radio show this morning. So one of the things that I would like to go over in as far as the adult and special education issues is I want to give a resource first. And I'm starting with the resource first. I don't usually do this because I think it's important for people to write down a few things right away. And that way you won't miss it at the end when I'm trying to close the show and trying to say it, depending on how many people come online before 11 a.m. this Arizona morning. One of them is, or the biggest organization that I totally endorse, is the Learning Disabilities Association of America. And this organization is just fantastic. They deal with assessing the problems when adults think that they have a learning disability, or that someone they care about does. Because when I sent out the notice about the show, I said, do you know anyone that's been in special education programs or feeling that the way that they took on the math and spelling and reading issues in school might be in making an impact on them in their workplace? So it's not just about whether you yourself have an issue, but whether or not you know someone that you care about that needs information contact the Learning Disabilities Association of America. And they do have some chapters in other countries, just a few, especially in Western Europe. So it's, but it's not necessarily global based where it's in every single country. But there are organizations like this in different areas. Now, if it's an impoverished area where the need is the greatest, unfortunately, that's where we don't have a Learning Disability Association to really help. Anyway, this LDA takes care of screening for adults with disabilities, with learning disabilities. And, oh, it does an accommodation for the GED, because there are accommodations. A lot of people are not aware of the accommodations that are available for you to take the test. And the accommodations, let me talk about that for a minute on the GED issue. And this is actually across the board for any testing issue. I'm in the field of educational psychology as a rehab counselor, rehabilitation counselor. And these are the kinds of things that I have to write and my fellow colleagues have to write. They're like prescriptions or treatment plans or whatever that we write for those students who are in need. And one of them is that they use an audio cassette, okay, when they're testing. That, of course, for students who are blind or deaf, we use Braille editions or sign language. We use a sign language interpreter. And we use video equipment if we need to, okay? We give, I had a student once who had diabetes, who needed supervised frequent breaks from testing, okay? Very common with IBS, which is irritable bowel syndrome. You see, now these are all these non-visible disabilities that no one ever thinks about. And sometimes you may be in a testing situation where you see someone get up and they allow that person to get up, but you better not get up. And that's because that person has an accommodation, you know, and they have to leave the room, you know. And a lot of people get jealous about that. Am I right? Maria, did you hear that?
Yes.
You're giving a little laugh there on me. What's coming up for you?
Is that you said you better don't get up, so you made me laugh. It's funny. But still, I mean, like me, I have to eat every 2 hours, so whenever I go, okay, I have to get out. I'm sorry. Even in church, my pastor knows the because we have Sunday school, and then I get up, like, before Sunday school is over, I get out to eat, and he knows about it because I let him know. So,
right.
So, funny though.
And, you know, that's a good point you're bringing out, too, Maria, is that a lot of students, because they don't know or they feel too embarrassed to ask for accommodations. And accommodations are important. And that's what you did with your pastor. You asked for an accommodation. Right.
Yes.
And you said you have to eat every 2 hours. So that means that you have to not only eat, but sometimes warm up your food or go to a place where you can eat. You don't want to sometimes sit in front of everybody else.
Yes, I know. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's something that has to be prearranged. And if you're taking a test, and some tests are a lot longer than 2 hours, then we have to make that accommodation for you. So what we do is we not only get a doctor's statement, but sometimes we as rehabilitation counselors can make that decision that you need that type of accommodation. And so if you know anybody out there, listeners out there, that has that need for an accommodation while they're testing, then you need to let us know. Sometimes large print helps, and you don't have to be have blindness to deal with large print. There's lots of other visual limitations that someone might have because of the genetic issues with their eyes, where they might need large print. So don't think that large print is just about students who have blindness. So there's a lot of different things up there, and there's not enough time to go through why each and every accommodation is necessary. But believe me, there are needs for accommodations, okay?
This is another one that's not talked about a lot. Sometimes we just need someone to read a test to us.
And you might say, wow, read a test? Yeah, read a test. Sometimes, you know, that helps so much, especially with people with learning disabilities who have an issue with reading themselves, reading the exams, or they get anxiety when they're beginning to read. And we're going to build a show around that, as a matter of fact, the anxiety disorder. And it's very, very real. And what happens is that they're not able to take a test for a long period of time, and that anxiousness interferes with the way that they read. And when they have someone reading for them, it makes it a little easier for them to get through the test, okay? So, and use of a private room. I mean, it's just, I can go on and on and on with the accommodations that so many people are not aware of. Call us. Contact WhiteAppleInstitute.org, okay? And, or have someone call us directly at 480-471-8082. Just look us up on the web and give us a call and let us know what needs you have and whether or not we can help you to arrange for accommodations to take the GED or any type of testing. And like I said, this is you can look at the Learning Disabilities Association of America, which is on the web also. And their call letters are, it's a little difficult. Just put in Learning Disabilities Association, okay? And that would, that'll give you the website that they go through, okay? And another thing, and I don't want to harp too much on this one particular organization because there are others, but this is one of the most famous ones that we have. It's a civil rights issue that they help people with, what is covered and what is not in the Americans with Disabilities Act. And there's a, believe it or not, there's a Rehabilitation Act in post-secondary education and employment, okay? And that's from, I think it's Dr. Patricia Latham, who wrote an article on post-secondary education and employment issues and what is covered. So I want to give her credit for that. So there's just a lot of stuff that you need to understand. Even in the transition to college, there's a lot of information out there about how to prepare from not only high school to college or adult education to college, but also transitioning from college into work. And most people work while they're going to college, especially if they have a family. And so we need to provide double accommodations for them. That means accommodations at work and accommodations at school, okay? So please make sure that you look at this. Now, I want to talk about the complexity, the hard stuff that goes on, the social and emotional issues, okay, the mental health issues that go on with learning disabilities, okay. It's horrendous because not only are we talking about feeling bad and feeling embarrassed because we have a learning disability, but we also have some emotional issues going on. And that starts in early childhood. Just listening to what adults say about us, especially our parents and our teachers. As practitioners, for you counselors out there and teachers, we need to understand that listening, listening is a key, as it is in any counseling situation for adults with learning disabilities. And we need to look at the factor that they need to be heard
about what's going on with them, not told. Because we don't really know the individual struggles that a person may go through when they have a learning disability. And especially if they're relying on their family for support and their family's not there. So it can lead to a lot of emotional problems in adults. And we need to be aware of that. This is not an easy road. So one of the other things that I wanted to talk about while I'm leading into these top five emotional issues is that, the top five emotional issues I wanted to discuss, because we're on the line of emotional issues with learning disabled adults, is that there are, five issues that I wanted to go through. And that is starting with the first one, that's the difficulty adjusting to change. Difficulty adjusting to change. When we talk about change, change is scary for everyone. Whenever we talk about change, people with learning disabilities and other neurological disabilities, change may be very, very difficult. And children with disabilities are already at a very, very sensitive stage. And so we want to make sure that if we have children that have any kind of special needs in school, that we that we're cautious about how we talk about them. We're just as cautious as we need to be when we're talking about adults with learning disabilities. Of course, we don't have to walk on eggs, because most people know what to say and what not to say. Like I said earlier in the show, using that word stupid or dumb is very harmful, very hurtful. But as adults, we end up using those words. Can you believe it? Whenever I hear it, it just makes me cringe. But just know, bring out your sensitivity that it is difficult adjusting to the change in life. And that when we talk about the unexpected things that can happen to someone with a learning disability, especially if you haven't been to school in a long time, these are unexpected changes in your life. Because you might know about school from when you went to school 10 or 20 years ago, but it's changed a lot now, especially with the age of computers. And so there's a lot of scariness. And people just don't want to admit, I don't know that. This is scary. It's like walking in into a world of somebody talking Japanese and you don't understand Japanese or Chinese or Greek or whatever. And all of a sudden you're put into the situation where you're supposed to succeed at what you do. Not only at college or adult education, but in the workplace. Hello. In the workplace. So here you are in a new job situation. You know that you have a learning disability based on the way you have done performed your math and your reading skills and your writing skills in the past. And it's scary because most people don't want anybody to know. So here we go with emotionally regulating this sensitivity we have with learning disabilities. And, you know, it's fortunate. Most adults that I come in contact with have learned how to handle that sensitivity. And they avoid getting involved with people that create these negative social interactions with them. They don't like it. So they stay away from those people that are like that. And some of them land up very depressed and suffer again, like I said, from that anxiety issue. And then when you look at the unemployment rate, try this one. The unemployment rate, a large amount of those adults, and now this is not empirical for those professionals out there listening to my show right now that might say, well, yeah, but do you have any empirical evidence, which means do you have any scientific evidence of this? No, I don't, but I can tell you that over 50% of the people that are standing in lines waiting for jobs usually have some type of learning disability, okay? Now, that's a high number, I know, but I guarantee you that if you look at and talk to them about their background, because I have, and I, like I said, I haven't done any real studies on this, but just from the people that I've talked to and the practitioners that are out there, the counselors and teachers, will tell you that this individual had some challenges in school with math or challenges with writing or reading. And so when they appear in front of that employer, there's this lack of confidence, especially when asked questions about their academic successes. They feel a lot of emotional wounds from their childhood and develop phobias or fears about getting in front of other people and talking about their life. It's why it's really hard for people with learning disabilities, any type of learning disabilities, to talk about putting together a resume, because they really feel they have nothing to offer. And I reach out to you, and I wish I could tell you in so many ways how special you are, not like special education issues, but special in the fact that you have something else to offer. Look inside of yourself at the other label that's there. There are other labels that you can wear proudly. You don't have to wear the label of, I was in special ed and I don't have much to offer anybody. That's not a great label to wear, and it doesn't make you feel good. And emotionally, it tears you down. And it's hard to deal with the emotions that are associated with not being able to cope in this world, looking at all the technology around. I mean, just looking at television and the things that they're doing on television is enough to scare a lot of people into not going after jobs or going after their dreams because they're scared. You know, there was this guy, his name is Thomas West, and he wrote a book, The Mind's Eye. And it talks about a very famous man by the name of Winston Churchill. Winston Churchill had a learning disability. And he was a very sensitive man about his learning disability. And if you could run across the board at very famous people who have had learning disabilities. And Churchill talks about how sometimes he would break into tears, even out in the public eye. Okay, and it was devastating for him to know that there were some things that he just couldn't learn and couldn't do. There's a lot of environmental stuff going on, too. I mean, sometimes people with neurological, that means that something's affecting their nerves, their brain. They can't be involved in too many conversations at one time. They can't read and listen at the same time. There's a lot of confusion in that. Many people with ADD, attention deficit disorder, have a lot of sensitivities to the environment. And have you ever seen, lately, there's been some signs going up because we're beginning to recognize that not only are there foods that people can't tolerate, but smells that people can't tolerate in the classroom. And I tell you, there's a lot of insensitivity about that. I've heard it so often with people saying, you know, I don't care what someone says about they can't smell my perfume or whatever. I'm going to wear my perfume at work. And they're not sensitive at all to the factor that somebody with ADD or a learning disability, it might affect them from a neurological standpoint where it affects their brain when you have certain smells, certain scents that trigger things in the brain. Certain foods even trigger things in the brain. Certain clothing, fabrics that they can't wear. So I hope I'm bringing some broadening your horizon out there about the different things that can affect people with that so-called label of learning disabled and or attention deficit disorder or social anxiety or phobias. There's so much of that out there, and you don't know it because most people won't tell you. They won't tell you that. Oh, by the way, it's hard for me to concentrate on two things at once. They have that ongoing joke about can you walk and chew bubble gum at the same time. That's a pretty frightening thing for somebody who deals with the issues of learning disabilities, and it's frightening. We have another caller online here. Good morning. This is Professor Applewhite.
Good morning. How are you? This is Eddie Applewhite.
Oh, good morning. Well, thank you. I'm so happy that you joined us this morning. What a pleasure.
Yeah, because I wanted to say something about learning disabilities of people.
Sure.
That maybe can't speak, not a few of them are speaking out because maybe people would misinterpret what they're trying to say.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to say this so many times because there are a lot of people that probably do not understand the lack of jobs. We don't have no jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to say this. Because we don't have no job, because machinery is taking over.
Mm-hmm.
The trash man, the garbage man, they used to go around and collect garbage. They used to have one or two people on the truck
mm-hmm.
when they're picking up garbage. But machinery has taken over. Now you don't need but one man to do that. And I was looking at that the other day.
Wow.
And I was thinking that we got to get this out. What is happening now is machinery is really taking over.
Mm-hmm.
President Obama and all the big officials, they never mentioned that. They're talking about getting jobs, getting more money, and getting jobs for people, but they're not going to get jobs because they keep building machines that's taking over, and unemployment still is going to continue because nobody is addressing this issue.
Wow.
What has happened? Machinery is taking over. People are out of work. There are sometimes 40, 50 people laid off from factories and places like that because they're bringing machinery in that's doing a lot of work that they could be doing. And so this is the issue that we have to address now and tell the people what is happening.
Yeah.
It never will get back like it was before because we have some people that there's one job that I think I can address to is that there were one place that put a machinery in the factory and they laid off 10 people.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just one place that people are being laid off. Where are they going to get jobs from anymore?
Right.
So that's what is happening to America right now and to the world.
What you're suggesting is wonderful because, and for those listeners out there, mm-hmm. that's my dad, and I'll tell you, he's taught me so many things. He's the inspiration behind all of the things that I do with this show.
I don't have the education with it, though.
Well, you don't have the academic, maybe, but you have a lot of education. You're very intelligent. You self-educated yourself.
Thank you.
Okay. But what you're suggesting to our listeners out there is that we need to put more emphasis into training people, retraining people into machinery and computers so that they can really compete for the jobs that are out there. You're absolutely
I don't see that they can, because by training people, like one machine can replace 10 people.
Yeah.
You know, so you have to have a something that's greater than what you just said to be able to take over.
Right.
And do these jobs, because as long as you have machinery that keep coming in, there's going to be a lot of people that's laid off.
Right.
And they can't get back. There's someone at my door, and I have to get it. So
okay.
Thank you very much for being able to put that out there. And maybe we keep putting it out there, people will become wise to it.
I appreciate that very much. Thank you so much. All right, Dad.
All right.
Wow, it's really a pleasure to have my father come on the show and share that, because I know his concern is very, very deep out there for the unemployment issue. And I'm very concerned myself at the fact that what he's saying is true. People need to be retrained, not only in the fact that they are their jobs are being taken over by machines or computers. And, you know, you're talking to a man who will be 83 this month, as a matter of fact. And so he's looking at a world very differently than what we know as baby boomers in our 50s, and especially for those even younger at 25, 30 years old that are just getting into the workforce after college. This is a frightening thing to know that the computers that you learned about in college are not the same computers that are in the workforce now, that has changed also. So there's retraining that needs to be done. And if you have a learning disability or any other type of label or stereotype that's been placed on you from our educational systems, then it's going to be even harder for you to make that step into the arena and say, hey, I'm here, I'm not going to wear this label of disabled, but I want to learn. How do I get into understanding more about computers? How do I get into understanding how I can get some new training so that my job won't be replaced in the future? Remember that somebody's got to make those machines and somebody's got to make those computers, and that's where our next step is going to be, my friends, is that we're going to have, and that's where the Department of Labor is putting an emphasis on jobs out there. Yes, we have the service industry. And we can't forget that service industry being the nurses, the restaurant, the waitresses, the food service, and that kind of thing. I don't see that in our future, that robots or machines are going to be able to replace that. Although, you know, that's happening in some places. But there's still going to be a need for those service industries, but not as much as there's going to be a need for technology. So people with LD, which is a learning disability, any kind of attention deficit, ADD, certainly anxiety disorders, need to be aware that there is a way to be retrained out there. And remember those accommodations that I talked about earlier, that if you get accommodations to go to school, then we can actually learn how to train you or someone that you care about how to do something very special so that they can hold on to a job for the future and grow with that job. We don't want you to give that up. I want to just take the last few minutes here and go over real quickly. We're talking about the five issues associated, the emotional difficulties associated with learning disabilities. And I went over the fact that we're talking about the difficulty adjusting to change and regulating your emotions. And I even talked about the environmental stuff like the smells in the air and foods and things that we can't wear. But there's also the issue of fear. Fear. Boy, that's a big label out there. And the fear that I'm talking about is the fear of being found out. That's the biggest one out there. Don't find out that I can't read, that I can't learn like everyone else. Fear of failure, fear of being judged or criticized, Oh, and the fear of rejection. Once I take that job and you throw something else in there that I'm not familiar with and I have to go home and I have to try to learn it or have to learn it in front of other people. Oh, my God, that is so overwhelming for so many people. For example, an adult who can hardly read might pretend to read a newspaper, okay, just to keep up with everybody else. Pretense is one of the things that we learn to overcome the fear when we have different types of literacy levels. Literacy being the ability to learn how to read and how to succeed in the academic world or the technology world, the world of technology. In addition to the fact that there are many myths associated with fear and with shame. And let's see, do we have enough time here to go over the learning disabilities associated with shame? We've got about 8 more minutes left on the show. And anyone that's online right now or wishes to call in and say anything, please feel free to do so because we are available. And I'm checking the chat line now. Thank you very much for the applause in the chat room. That's very nice. We appreciate you being part of the show this morning and that you're listening in. Okay. Please feel free to share anything you feel about this issue of adult education. So I'm going to go over the myths for a minute. Remember that we're talking about the practice of teaching and educating adults here. We don't give enough attention to that. And so we need to continue some discussions on what we call andragogy, okay? Because if you've ever heard the term pedagogy, that deals with children learning. Now we're dealing with adults learning. And most of the time we're learning in the workforce. And we develop certain myths are associated with adults. One of them is people with learning disabilities have below average intelligence and it cannot learn. That is not true. People with learning disabilities usually have average to above average intelligence. Get that. Okay, 33% of students with learning disabilities are gifted, according to one of my favorite writers, Baum. He wrote a lot of stuff on the issue of learning disabled students being gifted, and I taught a class of so-called learning disabled students who were tremendously gifted in certain areas. How about this one? Learning disabilities are just an excuse for irresponsible, unmotivated, or lazy people. Oh, that's another one. Stupid, dumb, lazy. Those, oh my God, those are those labels again. That's not true. Learning disabilities are caused by neurological impairments, my friends, not character flaws. Okay? So if you have a learning disability, understand it's about the way your neurons, okay, like nerve endings in your brain, work together to exchange information. So if you don't get the math, it's not because you're lazy or unmotivated or stupid or any of those things. I hear people saying that all the time. Well, I just don't get the math because I'm not smart in that area. It's not about being smart in that area. It's about the way your neurons communicate with each other. So what we do is we try to find other areas that you can excel in, that you can succeed in, okay? Here's another myth, and we'll go real quickly with this one. Learning disabilities only affect children, that adults kind of grow out of learning disabilities. No, it's not true. The usually learning disabilities span the lifetime, okay? They never, sadly, many adults, especially older adults, have never actually been even diagnosed with a learning disability, so they don't even know what's going on with them, okay, and why they can't learn certain things, especially those that come from schools, from school training back 20, 30 years ago when we did not understand things like dyslexia, okay. Dyslexia and learning disabilities are not the same thing. Dyslexia is a type of learning disability. It is not another term for learning disability, okay? It's a language-based disorder that affects a person's ability to read or write or verbally express themselves, okay? So I hope that, because I have a lot of people that come to me and they say I have dyslexia as a way of saying I have a learning disability. It's not the same thing. It's just a form, okay? And that learning disabilities are only academic in nature, okay? That's not true. Some people with learning disabilities have very, very, difficulties with reading, writing, or math. However, most people with learning disabilities have more than one area of difficulty. There's a Dr. Larry Silver that says learning disabilities are life disabilities, okay? And that the same disabilities that interfere with reading, writing, and arithmetic also will interfere with sports and other activities, family life, and getting along with other people. So I hope this all helps a little bit in explaining a little bit about the labels that we can wear in special education or adult education, and that this has broadened your horizon out there about what you can do to really address this issue and not feel, and never, hopefully, never let the words stupid or crazy or dumb cross your lips, especially when you know that someone may indeed be having some of these issues. Okay, we want to be really, really careful about the way that we talk about other people that are dealing with that. We never know when our neurons in our brain might not work for something that we want to do. Okay. So let's be careful of the way we do this. Remember that we're all children of God, okay? And as being children of God, we manifest the glory of God within us, okay? We are liberated from our own fear. Our presence automatically liberates others. Nelson Mandela said that in a speech based on Marianne Williamson's work. And we don't ever want to forget that. I have something to close with. Maria, is there anything else you wanted to say this morning?
No, ma'am.
Mm-hmm.
No, you go ahead.
I know that God wants us to do a good job with our lives. And Dr. Yvonne Brooks, who is a very good friend of mine and an educator, who wrote a book, Slicing Through Your Emotional Luggage, says this to us in a poem she wrote about don't you cozy down. In other words, don't you give up. Don't you cozy into a corner, okay, because of the labels that people put on you. Here she goes. Don't you cozy down. Life may offer you challenges riddled with peaks and but don't you cozy down. Life's turbulent currents may bash you about, but don't you cozy down. Life's pathways may lead you to false fits and starts that interrupt your dreams and your goals. Work diligently towards life's possibilities, and don't you cozy down. Don't give up, my friends. Look for education on accommodations. If you don't contact WhiteAppleInstitute.org or call me, Professor Applewhite, at 480-471-8082, then talk to a counselor, guidance counselor, advisor at a nearby local community college or even the library, and they can give you some information on how you can get started with getting into school or staying in school or in your workforce and beating the stereotype that's out there about you can't learn computers and machines and be in technology. You can. You can do it. God bless you, and we'll talk next week. Thank you, Nazim Rashid, for this great music. Get his book there, Reconnected, on Amazon. Okay, here's Nazim Rashid. Thank you so much. Next Saturday.